Good evening, everyone. Hello, can you hear me? Yes. Okay. So, welcome everyone to the last of our series on connecting to the Buddhas. So, where are they? Oh, okay. Can I just have? Actually, you could. Yes, thanks. So tonight's talk is a little bit of information about Yidams, protectors, and Dakinis. So don't get distracted by that yet. We have to do our motivation first. So this is on page, if you'd like to join in, it's page 7 of our little prayer teaching prayer text. So it's really important to try and new clock. Yes, it's reincarnated. It's important that we make this, from our own side, we make this time as meaningful as possible by having the right attitude for being here and trying to make our motivation for listening the very best possible. And as we all know, in the Mahayana tradition, the best motivation we can have is the bodhicitta motivation, wishing to developing that mind determined to achieve enlightenment, understanding that only as an enlightened being is one in a position to be of perfect benefit to all sentient beings, in a perfect position to repay their kindness. And the bodhicitta motivation wishes to repay that kindness because of feeling that kindness so strongly, developing great love for all sentient beings by remembering how immensely kind they are in every possible way, that I've depended on them life after life in every possible way, especially the love of a mother one has received from every sentient being many, many times. But also one has this wish to repay their kindness by freeing them from suffering, by realizing more and more deeply how every sentient being being trapped in samsara is and being under the control of delusion and karma is no matter what they do, they're subject to suffering of so many kinds. So feeling great compassion, great love for all sentient beings, we can develop the wish to repay their kindness by helping to free them from all suffering, helping them to achieve peerless everlasting happiness, and realizing the only way I can do that is to become a Buddha. So I must become a Buddha. So to become a Buddha, I need to rely on the Buddhas. So I need to know more and more about the Buddhas and how they manifest and so on. So for this reason, I can study this topic tonight, or at least get introduced to it. So we visualize Shakyamuni Buddha in front of us as our source of refuge, inspiration, and guidance. And as we think of the Buddha in front of us, we try and have a strong sense of all sentient beings surrounding us, at the very least, focusing on those that we're most connected to in this life, so our mother on our left, father on our right, family, friends and helpers behind us, harmas in front, and then as much as possible trying to open our hearts and minds to an awareness and concern for all other beings of cyclic existence. Sangha chodan sorge chonan la janjo bado dan kamzu chi dage jose gibe sunum gi Drapanja Sangha Drupar Shog Sangha Chadan Zarga Chonan La Chanjo Bada Dhanu Kamzo Chi Dhaga Chaja Gibe Sanam Gi Drapanja Sangha Drupar Shog Sangha Chadan Zarga Chonan La Chanjo Bada Dhanu Kamzo Chi Dhaga Jaja Gibe Sanam Gi Drapanja Sangha Drupar Shog. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha in order to benefit all sentient beings. So we now imagine that the Buddha, being pleased with our motivation to benefit sentient beings, shows this pleasure by now approaching us, and as the Buddha approaches us, the Buddha becomes smaller and smaller. When directly above our crown, the Buddha turns facing the same direction as ourself, dissolves into intense, blissful, golden light, and that light pours down into us, blessing our mind. So then we can enhance that positive state of mind by doing some breathing meditation just for a short time, such as the 9-round breathing exercise, to help enable our mind to become a little bit calmer, clearer, more concentrated, so that we can use that level of mind to listen to and think about the Buddha's teachings tonight. Thank you. We've just lost our projectionist. She will return though, I think, I hope. Otherwise tonight will be very boring if we don't have the pictures. Okay. Right. So I think last week I mentioned that my teacher Lama Sopa Rinpoche said that the meaning of the word mantra basically means mind protection. So the word yidam, also Lama Sopa Rinpoche explained, also has basically the same connotation of protecting the mind. So the term yidam, the Sanskrit term, relates to the tantric teachings of the Buddha. So the Buddha taught two main vehicles: the vehicle of individual liberation, whereby one recognizing the nature of samsara, one develops the wish to become completely free of cyclic existence, and one focuses on that for one's own sake, to get out of samsara, to be free of suffering oneself, and to experience the bliss of nirvana. And the result of that is to become an arhat. And then the other vehicle is the Mahayana vehicle. So the Mahayana vehicle has two aspects. There is what is called the causal vehicle of the Mahayana, or the sutra vehicle, or the paramita yana, which is the slow path to enlightenment, which takes many thousands and thousands of lifetimes to achieve. It's called the causal vehicle because one has to create the causes, you know, over and over again, each cause separately. It's called the the sutra vehicle, because it's, you know, the methods for achieving enlightenment are explained in the Mahayana sutras. And it's called the paramitayana because the basis of the practice are the six paramitas of generating generosity, morality, patience, perseverance, concentration, and wisdom. So that's one aspect of the Mahayana. And the other aspect is the fast path to enlightenment, which is called the resultant vehicle, or the Vajrayana, the diamond vehicle. What else is it called? Anyway, the tantric path to enlightenment. So this was taught by the Buddha to those bodhisattvas, the most advanced. Originally, the Buddha taught this path to those great bodhisattvas who couldn't bear the thought that it would take them an enormously long time to achieve enlightenment. Not because they were lazy about taking a long time, but that implied that while they were taking such a long time to achieve enlightenment, mother sentient beings would be suffering that much longer. So the Buddha taught this very fast path to enlightenment. And so originally that was only taught to very advanced, courageous bodhisattvas. But with the degenerating times, those teachings have become more widespread to less and less qualified people, until eventually it's available to us who aren't qualified at all. But the lamas these days say that if Tantra was only taught to people qualified to practice it, it would die out very quickly, or it would have already died out. So it's taught to people who aren't qualified in order to for us to get the imprints, so that in future lives, we will be when all the conditions come together, we will be able to practice properly. But even now, even as ordinary deluded beings, practicing Tantra can have all sorts of beneficial effects. Anyway, so in the practice of Tantra, there are four levels of Tantra. Okay? Maybe I can write these up on the board. So in Sanskrit, the first level, the basic level, is called Kriya Tantra. which means basically action tantra. I'm not going to go into all the details now. There's a Discovering Buddhism module called An Introduction to Tantra. So I'll go all through all of this in that course. The second one is called Charya Tantra, or which translates as performance tantra. And then there's what is called Yoga Tantra, which is not, you know, physical exercise stuff. Yoga Tantra. Yoga means union. And then the highest level is called, in Sanskrit, Maha Anuttara. Maha Anuttara Yoga. Maha Anuttara, with two T's, sorry. Sorry, my blackboard myth. I used to be a teacher a long time ago. This is just simply called Highest Yoga Tantra. Highest Yoga Tantra. Or HYT for short. And that has two aspects. There's what is called generation stage, the generation stage, and the completion stage. So the yidams that we're talking about tonight, or just briefly introducing, are associated with Highest Yoga Tantra. This is a term used for the deities of Highest Yoga Tantra. So the deities I talked about earlier on in the course, Chenrezig, or Thousand-Armed Chenrezig and Four-Armed Chenrezig, Manjushri, you know, White Manjushri, Yellow Manjushri, and Tara, White Tara, Green Tara. These are all deities of Kriya Tantra, the first level, the basic level. Although they all also have their highest yoga tantric aspects, and I'll mention some of them tonight. So the word yidam can literally mean mind protection, but what it also refers to is that, as I was saying last week in relation to the Buddhas of the five families, we belong to one of those families, in one of those Buddha families, because each sentient being has a particular karmic personality, or a personality related to their dominant delusion. Oh, it's good grief. I've had one of my senior moments. Now, why am I saying that? Yes. Oh, yes, yes, yes. So we all have our dominant delusion. So in relation to that, there is, if we want to follow the tantric path to enlightenment, which in Tibet, all the schools of Tibetan Buddhism encourage us to do so, right? That's the whole aim, is not to follow the path to our own liberation, to nirvana, but to follow the Mahayana path, and particularly to try to utilize the tantric path as much as possible. So for each sentient being, depending on their particular karmic personality and dominant delusion, there is one of these deities or yidams, which is our yidam, the deity that most suits us. So if we if we concentrate on that practice, this is the practice that will lead us to achieving enlightenment as quickly as possible. So how do we know which is our yidam? It's a matter of getting to knowing about the yidams to some extent, although in the past, of course, these were kept very secret. So the main way to know which was your yidam was that your guru would tell you which yidam you had the strongest karmic connection with, that if you practiced that deity, this would help you achieve enlightenment as quickly as possible. So I'd just like to make it, again, clarify that the way I'm talking about this is according to the Gelupa view. Each of the four traditions of Tibetan Buddhism talk about these things in slightly different ways. I'm talking about it according to the Gelupa tradition. So in the Gelupa, there are many, many tantric deities of the four levels, and within the highest level there are also many, many yidams. But in the Gelupa tradition, which we practice at in the center, in the FPMT in general, there are three main yidams that are emphasized, that are considered to be incredibly important to eventually receive the empowerments into and do the practices. So these three are the first three mentioned on the sheet that you've been given. These are Yamantaka, Chakrasamvara, and Guhyasamaja. So Yamantaka is the very wrathful form of Manjushri. Manjushri, remember, is the Buddha of wisdom, depicted having a yellow body, holding the wisdom sword in his right hand. So Yamantaka, before we look at these deities, I'll just say it just very quickly, we won't look at them yet. So Yamantaka is the very wrathful form of Manjushri, and is particularly about getting rid of hindrances, because Yamantaka is an extremely wrathful deity, very powerful, wrathful deity. But is also associated with the development of wisdom, because, you know, it's the wrathful form of Manjushri. Then Chakrasamvara. So each of the yidams, the deities, has a tantra written about it, or maybe even several tantras that explain all the practices that one can do in order to achieve enlightenment, even in one lifetime, because tantra says that if you're a super practitioner, if you practice really well, you can, from the moment you start practicing highest yoga tantra, you can achieve enlightenment in that one very life of an ordinary human being. I mean, very few people can do that, but it's still possible. And not only can you achieve it in that one lifetime, it is even possible to achieve it within 3 years. But I don't know exactly anyone who did that. even in the historical stories, I don't know. I think it took Milarepa longer than that, although he is believed to have achieved enlightenment in one lifetime. But I think it took him more than 3 years. But I'm not absolutely sure on that. So anyway, tantra, and highest yoga tantra in particular, is immensely powerful. With the other three levels of tantra, is also said you can achieve enlightenment in one lifetime, but that one lifetime doesn't refer to an ordinary lifetime. It refers to an immensely long life. If you remember, if you came to the talk about Tara. I mentioned briefly there is the deity White Tara, which is about long life. So there are a whole lot of long life deities, and the purpose of these deities is that the practices associated with them, for someone who is at an advanced level, they are able to prolong their life so your life lasts for thousands of years. And so once you've achieved that, you practice Tantra, that level of Tantra, and you achieve enlightenment in one life, but that one life lasts for thousands of years. Hard to believe, but that's what the teachings say. Whereas in highest yoga Tantra, one can achieve, as it says in various prayers, in one lifetime of this degenerate age, which means the life, the ordinary life of a human being, which is, 80 years if we're lucky, something like that. Okay, so Yamantaka. So maybe I'll just brief a little bit more. Yamantaka is in a sense the most important deity, Yidam, in the Galupa tradition, because it's the wrathful embodiment of Manjushri, and the founder of the Galupa tradition, Lama Tsongkhapa, was believed to have had a very special connection with Manjushri, that he was able to directly communicate with the Buddha Manjushri, and actually Lama Tsongkhapa was believed to be an emanation, a manifestation of Manjushri. That Lama Tsongkhapa wasn't an ordinary sentient being, he was an actual emanation or manifestation of the Buddha Manjushri appearing in the world for our sake. And so Yamantaka is like the Yidam for those of us actually committed to following the Galupa tradition. Yamantaka is like our general Yidam. Yeah. So many of the practices that are done in this tradition are done in relation to Yamantaka. Maybe we could have a look at Yamantaka. Yamantaka is very scary. And can we enlarge it? Anyway, if we can just get the image. I don't know why. It should be just a slideshow where you click and the next one comes. So, this is Yamantaka. One reason Tantra was originally kept secret and still should be kept secret to some extent is because these images can really put some people off, and they look at it and think, oh, this isn't Buddhism, this is devil worship. Yeah. And some people do react that way, misinterpreting things. But actually, that's not the greatest image, but... So, Yamantaka... again, there are various forms of Yamantaka. This is the... I can't even see from here properly. Yes, this is the single form of Yamantaka, which Yamantaka means, or it is translated as the Vajra Terrifier, or the Lord over Death. So Yamantaka is depicted... with his central face is of an angry buffalo. Then he has this little bit less wrathful red face, and above that a slightly wrathful face, a yellow face, which is Manjushri. And then he has three other faces on the right and three faces on the left. He has 16 arms and 34 legs. Right, and these flames pouring out of all, although it looks like just on the edges, one's supposed to imagine that the flames are pouring out from, you know, all every part of his body, all the pores of his body, flames are pouring out. He has a mala of 50 freshly severed heads. And all these bone, all this white, which you can't see clearly here, but these are bone ornaments. So one imagines that he's wearing all these ornaments made from human bone. So in Tantric Buddhism, there is a lot of imagery related to death and cemeteries, which is about impermanence, the images of impermanence, but also of emptiness. And he holds this skull cup in his hand with a cleaver, chopping the brains up inside. So this is also symbolic of emptiness to some extent. So I'll just read, and he's holding the fresh skin of an elephant behind him, a freshly skinned elephant. Remember, the elephant is a symbol of the mind. So I'll just read something of the symbology of Yamantaka, which might help dispel the view that it's something really evil, but it's actually very meaningful. There's no time to go into all the details of the other deities like this, but so the nine faces symbolize the nine scriptural categories of the Buddha's teachings. The two horns of his central face represent the two levels of truth, the conventional truth and the ultimate truth. His 34 arms and his body, speech and mind, so that adds up to 37, represent the 37 facets leading to enlightenment. His erect penis symbolizes ever-expanding great bliss. His 16 legs symbolize the 16 types of voidness. Then the under his legs, he's trampling on all these different kinds of beings and humans and animals and birds and so on. So the man and so forth that he's trampling on symbolize the eight cities that one achieves as an enlightened being, and the vulture and all the other birds symbolize the eight powers. His nakedness, because his whole body is completely naked, symbolizes that he is not covered with obstacles. In other words, he's completely removed all obstacles. His hair bristling erect, so that sort of brown area around the top faces is actually meant to be his hair, sort of flying up in upwards. So that so his hair bristling erect symbolizes achievement of the elevated state of nirvana. So that's a little bit of the symbolism of Yamantaka. And he's extremely wrathful. In order to, so that wrath is this incredible energy that is able to cut through. It is the energy of wisdom that is able to cut through all the obstacles to following the path to enlightenment. So we need to generate that that kind of quality symbolized by Yamantaka. So, of course, in the practice of Tantra, when one receives an empowerment, what that empowers us to do, or helps us to do, is to, and this is one of the special features of Tantra, is to visualize ourselves as a deity, that we imagine that we are a Buddha in that aspect. That's not the usual way we think of Buddhas. The Buddha behind us is how we usually think of Buddhas. But Yamantaka is another way of depicting the qualities of a Buddha. So all his hands are holding these different implements that also symbolize different aspects of enlightenment or qualities necessary to achieve enlightenment. So Yamantaka was the particular yidam of Lama Tsongkhapa, and also I think of the 13th Dalai Lama. He was a very major practitioner of this tradition, this practice. Maybe Cheryl, could you just do the next slide? Oh, okay. So this is Chakrasamvara. So Chakrasamvara is the deity that is related. As I said, Yamantaka is about getting rid of obstacles and developing wisdom. So in taking, receiving a highest yoga tantric empowerment, in the Galupa tradition, it is encouraged that Yamantaka is the first one you do and the first one you practice, because that gets rid of all the other obstacles for future practice. So this is Chakrasamvara. So again, there are slightly different versions of this, but this is the one particularly followed in the Galupa tradition. So Chakrasamvara, that deity, the practice associated with Chakrasamvara is about particularly developing great bliss. So one of the essential features of Tantra is about developing great bliss. So the reason for developing bliss is not just because it's nice, which it is. Apparently, I haven't experienced it, but of course, but that's not the reason, the main reason for developing it in the spiritual path. The reason for developing it is that if one is able to generate great bliss, the mind that is experiencing that becomes extremely subtle and refined. Or vice versa, if you develop a mind that is extremely subtle and focused and concentrated and refined, then that mind is able to experience more and more blissful states. And that blissful energy enables us to, it gives us immense energy to focus our mind in the practice of Dharma. Just in a very ordinary way of understanding, if you think about it, if you check your own experience, that when we are unhappy and depressed, then our mind is completely focused on ourself, but also there is no energy to do anything, even for ourselves, let alone others. And of course, that heavy negative energy can get to a point where one commits suicide, because there's no energy for this life to continue at all. Whereas if the mind is basically at peace, there's some basic contentment in the mind, some kind of happiness, then in that state we have the energy to go beyond ourselves and help others. We enjoy helping others when we're already in a good mood, right? Or it's easier to help others when we're okay. When we're not okay, when we're not feeling happy, then we don't have the energy to think about others or help them. But when the mind is in a good state, there is some energy. So imagine if the mind was experiencing great bliss. But particularly, this great bliss is used to help develop this very subtle mind that is then able to meditate on emptiness and destroy ignorance, because this is what is going to not only get us out of samsara, but eliminate the subtle obscurations to enlightenment. So that's why we need the practice of Chakrasamvara, because the tantra related to it is all especially about developing great bliss and realizing emptiness. Yeah, so Chakrasamvara, also referred to as Haruka, has a body that's deep blue in color, has 12 arms, has all the, again, has a rosary of 50 freshly severed heads. Those heads symbolize, he hasn't gone out and, you know, is a serial killer. Those freshly severed heads symbolize the 50 secondary minds. Some of you have studied with Jumpa Ignyan, whose other name is Ian Coghlan, the 50 secondary minds. So these have, this is what is represented by the freshly severed. They've been, you know, freshly cut, chopped, severed. The mind is free from all conceptual thoughts, the enlightened mind. And so one of the features of most of the tantric deities is, not all of them, the tantric yidams of highest yoga tantra, is that they are either wrathful or slightly wrathful. So Chakrasamvara is depicted with these four fangs. So he's got this kind of grin, this grimace, and the four fangs, and the flames coming out of his body, the flames of blissful wisdom. And he is also depicted in consort, in union with his consort, who is Vajrayogini or Vajravarahi. Again, for some people, that imagery of the male and female in union is considered very shocking and completely contrary to the Buddha's teachings, but this is cult because people don't really understand what it's all about. At a very ordinary level, the symbolism is symbolic of the union of wisdom and method, because the consort, the female consort, is the embodiment of wisdom, and the male deity symbolizes the method side of the practice, the method or bodhicitta side. So, enlightenment comes about by unifying wisdom with method, wisdom and compassion, in a very simple way. What we need is all wisdom and bodhicitta. One needs those two things together, and one of the unique features of tantra is that, and why it's the fast path. Even the lowest level of tantra is much faster than the sutra path to enlightenment. Is that in the sutra path to enlightenment, one has to accumulate the causes for method and wisdom separately. When you're meditating on emptiness, you can't practice the other things. You have to come out of the experience of emptiness in order to accumulate merit by practicing virtue, etc., etc. Whereas the unique feature of Tantra is that all of those things, the development of wisdom and compassion and bodhicitta, is done simultaneously with the one mind. This is the unique, special feature of Tantra, and why it is the fast path. So the symbolism of the male deity and the female consort in union symbolizes all of that. It symbolizes that, and also what it also symbolizes is that, as some of you may know, I won't have anything to talk about in the tantric course now if I say all these things. This is DB module, Tantra module in a nutshell. That some of you probably have heard about, that in tantric Buddhism there is the practice of people talk about tantric sex. You know, there's the sexual aspect. So this does exist. But it's not done at the practice of people like Mr. Sting, you know, from Mr. Sting, yeah, who's famous for practicing tantric sex, I think, from the Hindu tradition. So tantric sex in Tibetan Buddhism is not something taught to improve your sex life with your husband or wife or whatever. It's got nothing to do with that at all. It is, you know, sexual intercourse, but the purpose of it is not to have a nice life now or to have some pleasure. The purpose of it, and I can't go into the details now, but it's related to helping the... I think I explained this earlier in the course or sometime recently, that highest yoga tantra is about, at the completion stage, is about forcing the death process to occur while you're alive without dying. Because in the actual death process, just naturally, in the ordinary death process, when we die, the gross mind ceases and then the subtle mind arises because of the subtle energies in the body become dominant. But as the death process continues, those subtle energies fade away and the subtle mind ceases. And finally what is left is the most subtle energy existing, this very subtle wind energy, which is the most subtle kind of physical energy, and associated with that is the most subtle level of mind, which is in Tantra is called the primordial mind of clear light. So this is what highest yoga tantra is about, and only highest yoga tantra contains the method of isolating so that was the ordinary death process. So highest yoga tantra is about simulating the death process without actually dying, without actually going through the death process, but you force the gross mind to cease, the subtle mind to cease, so that what is left is you're using the very subtle primordial mind of clear light, which experiences great bliss. So what helps to do that for someone who has trained properly, has done all the very extensive preliminary practices, is to engage in this sexual yoga, because it generates the mind of great bliss, which helps isolate the mind of clear light. The mind of clear light. So it's not sort of some kind of, you know, debauched thing, and the number of people qualified to do it is very, 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 very few. There's many, many, many things that has to be done before one is able to engage in that, and you engage in that practice. And of course, you have to have permission and the guidance of a qualified guru to do it, not a fake guru, the real one. So you'll notice that Chakrasamvara is trampling these two figures under his feet. Under his left foot, he's trampling on this black figure. That's his left foot? Yes. Yeah. Okay. So that, just roughly speaking, is symbolic of anger, and the male figure, it's a male figure, black, is symbolic of anger, and the one being trampled under his right foot is a female figure, which is symbolic of desire, afflicted desire. So Chakra Samvara, that symbolizes subduing, eliminating those two delusions, overcoming them completely. Okay. I can only say a little bit about, because you're not supposed to talk to say too much about these things. Not that I know much anyway. So next one. This is another form of chakra samvara. Yeah. Now this one. This is the third of the major yidams that is especially emphasized in the Galupa tradition, and this is Guhya Samaja. So the practice, the tantra associated with the deity Guhya Samaja is about developing what is called the illusory body. So this, His Holiness the Dalai Lama explains that this is called the King of Tantras. The Guhya Samaja Tantra is called the King of Tantras, meaning it's the most important one, because developing the illusory body is the most important aspect of tantric practice. Because when one has actually developed the illusory body, In the generation stage, one visualizes oneself having this body of a deity. In the completion stage, at some point, you are actually able to generate that body. Your subtle physical energy manifests as the illusory body of the deity. Once you've done that, you're still not enlightened yet, but once you've achieved that state, you will never go into the Bardo state ever again, which means you will never be reborn in samsara. So it means once you've achieved the illusory body, you will definitely achieve enlightenment. Absolutely guaranteed. So although the teachings say that there's one yidam that is our special deity that we need to focus on, somehow in the Galupa tradition of Lama Tsongkhapa, Lama Tsongkhapa emphasizes we should practice all of these three, but they're all immensely complicated. You might be interested to know that Lama Zopa Rinpoche will be giving all three empowerments in Bendigo in October. But there are huge commitments with these practices. And I wouldn't recommend taking all three at once anyway for someone who hasn't ever taken one. Because even any one of them the karma of it is extremely heavy. The commitments, lots of commitments. Not something to jump into. As I said before, the Lam Rim teachings are set out to encourage us to enter into tantric practice. And Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who are the founders of this center and the FPMT worldwide organization, certainly encourage students, you know, very quickly to get involved in Tantra, but it's best to start with the beginning, you know, with the Kriya Tantra practices of Chen Rizik, Manjushri, Tara, Medicine Buddha. These are fantastic practices to get in, you know, relate to, very helpful. And then one can work up to, with having some familiarity with those, then one could consider taking on highest yoga tantra. Yeah. No, coming to that. No. Anyway, just wanted to emphasize those three are in the Galupa tradition are the three main ones. There's one more, but I'll, so another very important deity of highest yoga tantra, but it's not very common in the Galupa tradition, but we'll mention it, is the next one, which is Hare Vajra. Yeah, looks a bit like Chakrasamvara, but so I mentioned that in the Galupa tradition, Yamantaka is the main deity, is like the Yidam for the Galupas. So Hare Vajra is like the main deity for the Sakya school. If you're not familiar, there are four schools of Tibetan Buddhism. The oldest one is called the Nyingma school, which actually means the old school. Nyingma means old. Then the next oldest school is the Sakya tradition. Then comes the Kagyu. And then finally, the most recent is our school, the Galupa school, which was established by Lama Tsongkhapa in the 14th century. So anyway, Hare Vajra is a Yidam of the Sakya school. Then we have, next one. So this is Gyawa Gyatso. So this is the highest yoga tantra form of Chen Rizik, the Buddha of Compassion. So this is the initiation that His Holiness is going to give in Australia next year. And, yeah. Another form of Chen Rizik, the Buddha of Compassion, is the next one. This is Higher Griva. This is also a very wrathful form of Chen Rizik, the Buddha of Compassion. This is one of the main deities of the Nyingma school. Oh, Chakrasamvara is the main deity of the Kagyu school. Sorry, this is Higher Griva. This is a very wrathful form of Chen Rizik. Gyawa Gyatso is a semi-wrathful form of Chen Rizik. Okay? That's the very wrathful one. And Higher Griva is the main deity of Sarajay Monastery. So most of the teachers, the Lama, the Geshis, who teach at the FPMT centers around the world, come from Sarajay Monastery. So that's the main deity of Sarajay Monastery. That is a green horse head. Don't ask. Tantric symbolism is very esoteric. It's really, yeah. Next one. I'm just showing you. So this is Vajrayogini. Oh, actually the colouring there. She's red. She should be bright red. So Vajrayogini or Vajravarahi, it's slightly different, is the consort of Chakrasamvara. This deity is mainly associated with, well, originally with the Kagyu tradition, but this practice is probably one of the most, these days, among Tibetan Buddhists, is probably the most popular, widely spread practice of highest yoga tantra, because it's fairly simple. The visualizations associated with it are fairly simple, because if you think of all the other deities, I suppose I'm allowed to say this, when you receive the empowerment into these deities, you not only visualize yourself as that deity with all the details, with all the hands and all the implements, etc., etc., but you're supposed to visualize yourself as that deity inside a mandala, this celestial mansion, which has many, 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 many details that one's supposed to visualize. Whereas with Vajrayogini, so she's holding a skull cup and she's drinking this blood. The blood symbolizes great bliss. Because I think, in a very just a crude way of explaining, skull cup is, and chopping off the skull cup is like symbolizing destroying your ego. So when you destroy that, then you can experience great bliss. When you're free of ego and all that, you experience great bliss. So she's very popular because the practice is relatively simple, and also the mantra associated with of Vajrayogini is said to be immensely powerful. It's quite a reasonably long not very long, but it is believed to have incredible great power, very effective very quickly in subduing the mind and bringing realizations. And of course, she's associated with great bliss. So, one is able to if one can do it, it helps generate great bliss. And once one's able to generate great bliss, then all the other realizations can come very quickly. Okay. Just before we take a break, we'll just look at the. There are many, many other yidams of highest yoga tantra. I'm just showing you some of the most common, especially in the Galupa tradition. Some are from the other tradition, but these are the most common ones that you're likely to see, likely to have the possibility of receiving empowerments into at some point in the future, if you're interested. These are the ones that are most commonly practiced these days. So now the next one is, that is color chakra. So color chakra is a very unique deity, because all the other deities of highest yoga tantra that I've shown so far and talked briefly about, they all follow one system of explanation of how to achieve enlightenment, the tantric path to enlightenment, whereas the color chakra tantra talks about quite a different approach to achieving enlightenment, a kind of different understanding of the subtle energies of the body. And His Holiness says this is an even more profound explanation, but it's also vastly more complex. The term color chakra means the wheel of time. And although it is the most advanced tantra of all, the most complex tantra, and a tantra in it's in its own unique category, and there are no other tantras, as far as I know, associated with it. You know, this system, there's only... there is the other system, where there is all these other deities, but they all the practices are all basically similar. Once you know some of the practices, you can apply them to all the other deities. But this one has its own unique explanation. And it's immensely complicated. And in Tibet, it was very, very rarely given. And in fact, the practice almost died out. But then it was revived by the Dalai Lamas. I think it was revived by the 13th Dalai Lama. Anyway, the 13th Dalai Lama only gave it a few times in his lifetime, 3 or 4 times, I think. Whereas this present Dalai Lama has given it an enormously, I've lost track now how many times, it's over 20 times, I think. It takes much longer to, a normal empowerment of highest yoga, to receive the empowerment takes 2 days, or is done over 2 days. This one is done over 10 days, and the ritual associated with it is immensely complicated, and many other people are involved, and there's all this ritual dancing done, and it's quite mind-boggling. But one of the reasons it is given, and it's given, it attracts enormous numbers of people, which is very interesting. There's some special karma about this deity at this time. But one of the reasons His Holiness gives it is because it's somehow associated with bringing peace to the world, that somehow by giving this initiation, this empowerment, it helps subdue all the craziness in the world. I mean, there's already a lot of craziness. That's why His Holiness had to give it 20 times. If he hadn't, probably the world might have blown up by now. Who knows? And of course, His Holiness also says the reason he gives it, because it, for some reason it attracts a lot of people, because it's considered to be such a special practice. And also another thing that's associated with it. Oh, this gets very complicated. Have you heard of Shambhala? Right. So some of you have heard of Shambhala. So Shambhala is this. What is Shambhala? It's like this pure land, but a pure land that exists. It's a hidden pure land that exists somewhere in this world, they say. Populated by bodhisattvas. And at some point in the future, before Maitreya Buddha appears in this world, there's going to be a horrible war, where the forces of darkness will really manifest in this world. This is the prediction in the Tantras, especially in the Kala Chakra Tantra, that a really terrible time when this very dark force will become very dominant in the world. And just at that time, the Shambhala Pure Land will manifest, and the Shambhala warriors will come and overwhelm the dark forces, the dark side, and the Dharma will triumph. So it says, if you receive the Kala Chakra empowerment properly, with the right motivation and everything, you will be born into the Shambhala Pure Land. So lots of Tibetans want that. And then all the Westerners, the Injis, who hear about it, want it too. So they flocked, even though they have no idea what's going on, because it's immensely complicated. And they're usually having a picnic while His Holiness is giving the initiation. It's unbelievable. Anyway, His Holiness, knowing that, and he says the reason he gives it so often is because to take this empowerment, apart from all the other commitments, you have to listen to 3 days of Lum Rim teachings first. And His Holiness says, that's the most important thing. Because most people would never come and listen to these teachings otherwise, but because they want this empowerment, they have to attend the 3 days of general sutra teachings about developing renunciation, bodhicitta, and wisdom. And as my teacher once, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, once most simply but most wonderfully and profoundly said, what makes Tantra really special is the three principal paths of renunciation, wisdom, and bodhicitta. If one doesn't, in other words, if one doesn't understand these three things, and if one doesn't have some real experience of them, practicing Tantra is meaningless. It doesn't work. It's only when one has some real experience, realization of renunciation, bodhicitta, and wisdom that these four levels of Tantra will actually work. Anyway, that's a very, very primitive, simple, brief introduction to some of the main yidams of highest yoga Tantra. Before we have our tea, a question? Yeah? No. It's too complicated. It's just... I actually have received this empowerment, but I'm not familiar with all the details and so on. But you can read about it. This actually... This is the strange thing that, you know, highest yoga Tantra is meant to be kept very secret. People who have received the empowerment should not talk anything about it and whatever. But there are many books, you know, really good books, you know, authentic books on this Tantra published in English that you can read about the empowerment and everything. So, and you can certainly Google this and find probably a list of the symbolism of all the... But if you look or read, Kala Chakra, the main deity, the male deity, has many arms, and each finger of each arm, each joint, is a different color. Yeah. So you have, when you get the empowerment, in order to gain the realization, you have to be able to visualize that. I mean, that's the aim. I mean, you don't have to be able to do it immediately, but one is, it's mind-boggling. I mean, so that's what, I mean, we're not at that level where we can do this. But, you know, the initiation is given, the empowerment is given. Well, the commitments are basically the same with all of them. The main commitment, really, is that the person who gives you the empowerment, you have to see them as a guru, meaning you have to see them as a Buddha. You have to have pure view. You have to train to maintain a very pure view of that person for the rest of your life. Never criticize that person. Never listen to criticism about him or her from other people, because this, you know, is the worst negative karma one can create. That's, you know, that actually is the main commitment in many ways, which most people don't realize. But then, you, to receive the empowerment, you have to take the complete engaging bodhisattva vows. You receive the tantric vows. In the Galupa tradition, what is unique to the Galupa tradition, in order to be able to keep the tantric vows, because if you don't, the karma is super heavy, in order to keep the tantric vows in a minimal way, you have to do what is called the six-session guru yoga every day. You have to do it in three times in the morning, three times in the evening. You have to do that. And then, so these are the general commitments. Of course, you have to have refuge as well. So you've got all the bodhisattva vows, all the tantric vows, the seeing the guru as Buddha. And then there is the specific commitment of the deity. And that depends on the lama giving the empowerment, what the commitment is. It could just be recite. There may be no commitment. You don't have to do any practice. You may have to recite the mantra of the deity every day. You may have to do the meditation practice, what is called the sadhana of the deity every day. You may have to do the what is called the approach retreat of the deity within your lifetime. You may have to do all of those things. what? Ideally, yes, yes. Yeah, you need, and many people don't, but you should, my opinion, you should, it's, especially if you're the first initiation you take, it's very, very significant. Ideally, you should receive it from someone who you already feel is your root guru, but anyway, from someone you feel is a greatly realized being, and someone who you have a connection with, a strong connection with. Ideally, people often don't do that, but that's my suggestion. Tea break.